둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I didn't know it was going to be a video.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the series. Of course, you know what to do if you like what you see, what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the show a rate, or hit the rating button. Leave us a review if you feel so inspired. We've had some great guests on lately, including the Veronicas that were just here, Adrian Linker from Big Thief, Anna Camp, the Pitch Perfect star has a new short film called Neodome. Chris Robinson of the Black Crows stopped by, Johan Rank, the director behind Spaceman, starring Adam Sandler, Luke Hemmings of 5 Seconds of Summer, Nick Robinson, he's in Damsel with Millie Bobby Brown, Tom Payne, he's starring in Imaginary, as well as the upcoming Kevin Costner movie Horizon. We also talked with Joe Keery from Stranger Things and Fargo, Neil Finn of Crowded House, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain. We're going to be talking about their brand new album, Glasgow Eyes, which actually lands on their 40th anniversary year. So William's going to tell us how they had to restart recording the entire album from scratch after the engineer lost the entire original album. We'll talk about how this record lines up with the 40th anniversary and how it speaks to their career and their eclectic list of influences, which might be surprising, include prog rock and the Eagles. William's going to go on to discuss how his technical limitations have always driven the band's sound, why they wrote a tribute to Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground to close out the record, and an update on their upcoming biography, which may come out later this year or next. All that and more, we're talking Glasgow Eyes. It's Kyle Meredith with William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain.
Hello, how you doing, Kyle?
It's such a treat anytime you all give new music, and especially when it's so good. This record is fantastic. So I just want to throw the compliments your way to begin with as a congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I quite like it as well.
What does it take at this point to... is it any different to make a record? I mean, do they have starting points?
Yeah, this one was a bit weird. We started in October 2019, which was, you know, just before the lockdown. And we managed to get four or five decent backing tracks. Then the lockdown happened, and we went back to it a year later worked on the backing tracks and thought we had half an album recorded. And then the engineer at the studio told us that he had lost all of our recordings.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that was how the album started, which wasn't really, you know, a great start. And we were kind of like, to be honest, when you've recorded something and you lose it, it's kind of like, it's incredibly painful, you know? And yeah, so that's how the album started. And it wasn't a start. It was a horrible false start. And so we just, you know, like the Chumbawamba song says, you pick yourself up and you know, you get back up again. And we did. And we went to Glasgow and we basically recorded it last spring and into summer.
Yeah, that's, I can't imagine. You hear about, you know, like, some artists will get, you know, the laptop stolen or the tape stolen, you know, back in the day. And it just does feel like it would be defeating. But it also makes sense. Like, I was thinking about when Jim and I did an interview, probably right before this, because we were talking about the Monkey album and of course your most recent record. And he seemed very optimistic that it was going to be, we're going to get right back on the horse. We're going to make another record really, really quickly. And, you know,
yeah.
And things happen. I assumed, you know, the pandemic was part of it. Hearing about this, when you go back in then, so everything is lost and you have to start back over. I mean, do you have anything scratched to remember what it went? Or are you just going by your memory? Are you trying to replicate those moments?
We had some, to be honest, most of it was just gone. We had a couple of demos where, you know, there was maybe a couple of nice guitar riffs or whatever that was preserved. But it was just heartbreaking, you know. And I've been in this business for 40 years. And the only time anything close to this has happened is like 1989, a tape-op scrubbed over a mix once. And it was no big deal. Even then, it was a bit painful, but it's, fuck it, we'll do another mix, you know. But this was like five or six almost completed songs. And it's just, yeah, it's just really heartbreaking. But it worked out, you know. It's like, and it kind of proved a resilience and commitment, really.
Obviously, I can't tell anything. I mean, these songs sound fantastic to me. But interestingly, because of this.
Well, actually, I'll tell you another thing. A couple of the songs, two or three of the songs that we re-recorded, we'd done much better. I'll tell you that. I felt in my heart that, like, wow, this went a different way from, you know, the way we did it before. So I kind of like, well, I won't forgive the engineers. I won't forgive them, because in this day and age, to not back up digital recordings, it's just insane, you know? I thought it was impossible to lose something these days because you've got so many hard drives that you can put stuff on. In the old days, maybe 25 years ago in Pro Tools, maybe that could happen. But in 2020 or whatever, I just feel it's like almost like sabotage or extreme stupidity.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, it worked out. I don't want to go on too much about that, you know. It worked.
Well, and my other point being that because of how this happened, now this album does arrive, as you mentioned, on the 40th anniversary. Like, and that's, you know, whether you mean to or not, that's kind of a nice thing to sort of, at least for a media story, at least for your publicity.
Yeah.
Do you think it lends anything to the record? I mean, obviously you were recording it before the 40th, but now that it's here, do you find that there's any kind of syncopation there?
I don't think we were aware while we were recording it. It was 40 years ago, you know? I mean, 40 years is a long time. And I don't know. If I'm alive in 20 years, then it'll be 60 years. I think what's happened, what's changed in the whole world is for a start, adults aren't growing up anymore. Rock stars aren't retiring and fading away anymore. You know, Kim Deal's just made an amazing new record. She's 70 years old. The Stones made a decent attempt. You
it's
know,
pretty good.
Yeah, for a bunch of 88-year-old guys, I would call that a decent attempt. That's how I'm saying. And the Lady Gaga thing, I thought was brilliant with it. But anyway, my point is the world has changed. Nobody's fading away unless, you know, they're forced to. Nobody's growing up unless they're forced to. And, like, for instance, I remember talking to my mother and father and asking them why they never went to see the Beatles and Stones. And my mum would say, well, we were married and too old. I said, what age were you in 63? She'd say, like, 25, 24. I'm like, ah! And you never went to see the Beatles and the Stones because you thought you were too old.
At 24, at 25.
Yeah,
wow.
It's insane. And it's like, I saw an article recently and it was like the Golden Girls. And you thought they were old ladies, but they were like 49, 53, things like that. And
I've seen that one too. That one, that will it blows your mind. It really does.
It does. So this is a new world we're living in, and I don't think anybody really thinks they're over the hill anymore. If you've got a wee bit of spunk in you, you know, a wee bit of juice, I think that's all you need, you know?
And we'll be right back, right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain. Do you find that you're pulling from the same place, you know, to find that fire when you're songwriting or when you're recording, when you're trying to pull off the performance?
Do you mean like influences and stuff? Because I think that has changed like such a lot from when the band started. When we started 4 years ago, for instance, I hated jazz. I hated atonal music. I couldn't understand it. I thought it was just, you know, rubbish and made up nonsense. And now I'm like, now I get it, you know, now I get it. And now I get all the prog rock bands as well that I used to like laugh at. I'm like, I'm like now a big Robert Fripp fan and like, you know, King Midas anyway, yeah, things have changed and there's different. And I think Jim would say the same as well. You know, like who you are now is 40 years different, 40 years of life experiences and tragedies and everything. But yeah, it's good to be still having a bit of fire in you, you know, when you're old.
Those bands that you surprise. And I've gone through that too, especially the bands that like, you know, I don't know if you did the same thing, but like I, you know, a lot of people when you're young, you sort of rebel against the music that your parents listen to. And as you get older, you realize that music is in your DNA. Like one day I wake up and like, oh, wow, I'm a Bob Seger fan. I guess maybe I've always been about unapologetically. And I still love Sonic Youth at the same time. And you can do that. But I will say, when I looked at the track list and I see one called The Eagles and the Beatles, and that was not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
And you're singing about the Stones, of course, so I didn't know if that was tongue-in-cheek or if, like, where did the Eagles play in this?
Well, there was actually a verse that never made the cut, and that was, and the Eagles were mentioned. And the song was called The Eagles and the Beatles. And then I cut the verse with the Eagles in it, and I thought, well, it's not the Eagles and the Beatles anymore, but I like the title, so I thought, well, I'll keep the title. But it's basically a song about my love for music. And the reason I wanted to put the Eagles in there is because I wanted to show people that how eclectic we are. I mean, in 1977, I was a punk. I was in a Clash and the Sex Pistols and Subway Sect. But I was also into Peter Frampton. And the Eagles' greatest hits at Hotel California was huge in my house in 1977.
Undeniable song.
Yeah, we'd be playing like Peter Frampton and then the Clash. And I remember thinking when punk happened, I don't have to give up things to be a punk. Most people, I think, did. They were like, well, I'm not going to listen to Led Zeppelin anymore because I'm a punk. But I think what differentiates fans or from musicians is I think musicians will love anything and will say, yeah, I love the Barbie song because, you know, and like a lot of people are like too cool for school to admit things like that. Where I think your average musician will go, I love the Barbie song. Of course they do, great little record. And well, I know we were like that and you were saying rebelling against your parents' records. We never did that. Loved my parents' records. My parents listened to Jim Reeves and Johnny Cash and Nat King Cole. And I didn't grow up like thinking this was crap music. I loved it. And same way when punk happened, you don't give up what you love just because you've, you know, something new's coming along.
Yeah, and it is interesting because, of course, there's one way that the history books paint it. And for a lot of people, as you said, you have to give up Led Zeppelin if you're going to like the Pistols.
Well, some people did. I know some people did. They gave that up because now they were a punk.
Right.
And I didn't see, I thought you could be a punk and be a Burt Bacharach fan, you know?
And I think that's what a lot of my favorites, I mean, Joe Strummer would have said the same thing. You know, he showed his influences there. You know, he didn't give up. Even when talking with, you know, some of the Bunnymen, of course, they were into the Doors at a time when it was very uncool. And those ended up being my favorite bands because you can hear the eclectic sounds, you know, as with the Mary Chain too. Like it's all there. I really appreciate that. And hearing that, like on this record, you have very noisy moments, as might be expected. And then you've got songs like Mediterranean X Film and Second of June. I mean, these are fun songs and sweet songs. Do you realize when you're being pulled one way or the other?
I'll tell you what happens with me anyway. I write a song and I hear the record in my head. And I don't think it's ever worked out that way. It's never what you've got in your head happens on a record. And I think it's a good thing because it's usually better. It's usually like bigger, more expanded. And like I said, a couple of the songs, like the Mediterranean X Film, that we lost some of the recordings of that. Well, that's when we re-recorded that, it went a totally different way. I don't know why, something happened and just went a totally different way. And I was like, thank you, whoever it is, the god of music. Because I think a lot of musicians will tell you this as well. A lot of time in the studio, accidents happen. Things like somebody will touch a switch that shouldn't have been switched on, and then bam, the sound changes, and suddenly you're all excited, and it's like, wow, we thought we were going this way, and now we're going this way. What's going to happen if we go this way? And yeah, I think the songs, they pull you, you know, you think you're producing the song and sometimes the song is producing you, it's taking you somewhere. Like, especially that song was so slight, it just had a little riff. And then when we re-recorded it, all these other little things just started happening. And I played the wrong chord once. I should have played the G, and I think I played an F minor, and it sounded, it was like, hey, who knew an F minor should have been where a G was? I would never have done that, but it's, you know, it's somehow the bass is playing a note that makes it work or something, you know? That's the magic of recording. It's I think, I don't know, maybe some people produce music and what's finished is what they hear, but knowing me, I want to be taken somewhere. You know, I don't mind.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain. And there's moments, of course, inevitably, with any song that will, for me, it reminds me of other little moments. I wrote down American Born. As soon as American Born came on, I started thinking of Rocky Erickson's I Walk With a Zombie.
Yeah.
Lyrically, it has nothing to do with that. There's a little melodic thing right there to it. And
I walk with a zombie. I can see that. Oh God, I hope I don't get sued.
No. See, that's, I always like, if I were a performing musician, like I would take those moments live, put them together, you know, just make it work as a whole thing. But that's, I know that's not a question. Just one of those moments I hear that and I'm like, oh man, that's a great thing. But I also imagine as a songwriter, how often do you get in the way of yourself? Oh, I can't play that because it sounds like this. Or do you throw your hands up and go, fuck it?
Well, I think sometimes, like, I don't think we ever sound like anybody, even if we tried, and we have tried sometimes. And I think when you're like, not the greatest virtuoso musician, I think, like, for instance, I think if we tried to sound like Led Zeppelin, it would sound like nothing like Led Zeppelin, because there's no way I could play like Jimmy Page. There's no, you know, and it's no way. But in our own way, something new would happen. I know, because we've done this before. In fact, when we first started, you know, we would say things like, this is a Ramones song, or this is a Subway Sex song, you know, stuff like that. And then people would say, that sounds nothing like the Ramones. And we'll go, it does, it really does. We'll go, no, it doesn't. And we'll go, oh, well, fair enough. We'll take it, it's a Mary Chain song. And I don't think I ever want to get too clever, too great with my guitar and my production. I always want it to be that 10% of don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You know, I think that believe it or not, that don't know what the fuck I'm doing sometimes, like, is the inspiration you need.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you find the people that become too much of a virtuoso and they master it's impressive what they can do. But then you find out that their creative spirit has sort of left, you know?
Like, well, I remember reading an interview with Bernard Sumner from New Order. And somebody was talking about, it was a guitar magazine. It was quite funny, actually. And somebody was talking about, you know, how's your skill level improved since you started in 1979 or whatever. And he said, my skill level was like, it hasn't improved one single bit. I'm just as good or bad as I was then, but I don't need to be, you know. And I remember thinking, I know what you're saying exactly. I know what you're saying. There's Robert Fripps in the world, and there's no Jeff Becks anymore, but, you know, there's Robert Fripps in the world, and that's fucking great. But there's also Bernard Sumner that can play like two or three notes and take you to the same places, you know. You know, and that's my type of playing. I'm not Jeff Beck or Jimi Hendrix. I'm Bernard Sumner and Peter Hook.
Well, and thank goodness, because I needed your music. You know, people needed you to sound like that. That's why it worked.
Yeah.
You fit exactly where you needed to be. And I don't mean that as some pie in the sky statement, you know, and I don't know how those things work, but thank goodness it did, I guess, is what I'm getting at. While we're still sort of talking about things like this, the final track, while it takes some creative spelling, with Hey Lou Reed, does that have anything? Do you have Lou Reed in mind when you're doing that song? Does it have any connection like that?
It's basically a tribute to, Lou Reed and the Jesus and Mary Chain, and it's about the Jesus and Mary Chain and the Velvet Underground, and they, I think more than any group, they really inspired us, because we were talking about non-virtuoso and simple guitar lines and all that. That's where they were, you know? They were, like, incredibly simple. And I think anybody who's ever picked up an instrument knows the simple stuff is not easy, you know? You write, you can, yeah, you can be Jimi Hendrix and everybody knows you're brilliant. But sometimes, like, playing your little two or three note solos, people don't get it. They don't get how that can be as brilliant as any. Well, there's a lot of arrogance with that song, and I'm not saying we're like the equal of the Velvet Underground. That's not what this song's saying. But basically, what it's saying is that we have a name. Our name phonetically sounds like Lou Reed, and we have this. I feel this connection. I feel like, you know, growing up, I felt like me and Jim were really outsiders, and it's just like a lot of my favorite musicians. I don't think they were popular in school. I don't think they had, you know, the most well-adjusted minds, you know. And well, I think well-adjusted people, to me, well-adjusted people are almost psychotic. You know, that Christian Bale character, and like, do you ever sometimes see really well-adjusted people and think, what's going on there? Where did they hide?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
You do. Now. Yeah. You got it. It was perfect. It was perfect. You know, I'm just thinking about some of these songs. And again, I think I could go through every one of them. I will say quickly, sort of to wrap up here too, you know, a lot, because it is a big year. You again, it's a 40th anniversary year. You have this record, Glasgow Eyes, and you have an autobiography. Like, you guys wrote the book, right? The book is coming out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When is that happening?
Oh, I don't know. I really no idea.
Well, I guess really what I'm getting to, the real question here is, does this tell the entire story, or is it one of those biographies that sort of take us up to a certain point?
It's not finished yet, and but I think it takes us up to like the end of the 90s. I'm not sure if we go into like it's still to be edited, so I don't really know if we're going to include the later stuff. No, it's just in the 90s, yeah, because it's ghostwritten, you know, you have to get things ghostwritten and stuff.
Well, that's kind of a popular thing. I mean, Bobby Gillespie's book, you know, I had him on recently, we talked about that, and the Bunnymen book, and they all go up to a certain point. And I think that's actually really smart. It gives you a second book if you want it. You know, I don't know if that's part of it, but it's like, you get two books out of a career.
Yeah, I'm not sure I wanted, though, because I thought, like, doing the book was actually, to me, it was like going to the dentist, to be honest. Like, being asked to remember, like, what happened in 1984 and what happened in 1992 on Lollapalooza. And I'm like, I don't remember so much, you know? I really don't remember. And, I mean, I've always loved, like, all biographies and stuff, but sometimes, like, when you're actually in somebody's autobiography or in some book, like somebody wrote some book about creation a few years ago, and I was mentioned in it a couple of times, and I remember thinking, that never happened. Surely that's not how I remember. And, yeah, I think every autobiography is a little bit fantasy, because I don't think people... I don't think five people remember the same thing one way. I think there'd be five different stories, like even a week later, let alone 20, 30 years later, you know?
No, I feel for you. And because the same thing, like, luckily no one's asking for my life story, but my 20s, yeah. I see the pictures. I'm like, don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
I was under the influence for most of it, but.
I just don't like like remembering. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, things happened. I need to talk about it, you know. It's like, and what are profession, you know, if you're a plumber, do people come and say, so what was that toilet like you fixed 40 years ago? What were you thinking when you were doing that? And it's like, I don't know.
Jiggle the handle, left.
Yeah, I fixed it and it worked. And then I had a beer, you know.
Well, I will say, even with that, I'll still look forward to reading it because I love what you guys do. I do. I love what you guys do. And this record is just another chapter in that, that I'm so happy that you guys continue to do what you do. So seriously, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the music and thanks so much for taking the time to talk about it. It really has been a pleasure.
All right, then. Thank you, Kyle. Wasn't too bad.
My thanks to William Reed. The new Jesus and Mary Chain album is called Glasgow Eyes. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. I'll give you 3 new interviews every single week if you do. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And again, if you've already subscribed or if you're just about to do it, go ahead and give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired, and then head over to WFPK.org. So I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent episodes featured some classics and favorites from Bob Dylan, Tom Waits, Camera Obscura, Sarah McLachlan, Tori Amos, Nick Lowe, Andrew Bird, Angie McMahon, Paramore, Gomez, Robert Bradley, Otis Redding, The Beatles, Nikki Lane, Beyonce, Madonna, R.E.M., Nora Jones, Churches, English Teachers, St. Vincent, Laura Marling, The Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Dead, Edwin Collins, The Record Company, and my interview with Lisa Loeb. That's just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Set your alarms now. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
How do we do this? How do you end it?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.